The story of Benedict and Scholastica, which is found in Book 4 of the Dialogues of Gregory the Great, I should mention parenthetically that there has been some rather animated discussion in recent years about the authorship of the dialogues. We won't go into that here. We're going to presume that they are by Gregory, or at least that the overwhelming majority of the dialogues are by Gregory the Great. And if anyone wishes to discuss that question in more detail, they can do it with me personally. This story of Benedict and Scholastica, and indeed the section that follows it, constitutes what Father Adalbert de Voguier suggests is a literary diptych, although he doesn't quite use those words. A diptych being a double panel with two icons in which each picture highlights and gives meaning to the other. The one can't really be understood without the other. And the two panels in this story, and please do download and read Father de Voguier's description of this story, the two panels are Benedict and Scholastica on the one hand, the story of their meeting, the famous lightning storm, Benedict staying in their holy conversation, and so forth, is the one panel, but the other panel consists of Benedict in the tower window. In the story of Benedict and Scholastica, as we'll see, the goal seems to be the depiction of a very special kind of monastic conversion, transformation, from man of power, man of miracles, man of doing, man who's always right, to someone who's wrong, someone who has to discover a deeper loving in order to make spiritual progress. That's, on the one hand, in the story of Benedict and Scholastica. On the other is the powerful vision of Benedict the Contemplative. And we'll consider this part of the story in a separate lecture in the next part of the course. But let's look now at the story of Benedict and Scholastica. It is all about, Gregory tells us in the first paragraph, power. Notice the highlighted words. He mentions St. Paul. Paul did not have the power to obtain what he willed, and then he says in the same way, Benedict, similarly, quod voluit non voluit. That which he willed, which he wanted, he was not able. He did not have the power to accomplish. What Gregory is going to tell us in this story is that in order to be transformed from a man of miracles, from a man, as it were, of power, into a man of vision, Benedict must go through an experience of powerlessness. He must recognize the degree to which his own legalistic capacity, and of course the lex, the law, the rule of Benedict, is a sort of tremendous admiration and veneration by those who come afterwards, but that lived out in a kind of strictness without an awareness of charity, leads one into the state of being what will clearly be described as the Pharisee. Strange to say, Gregory the Great depicts his great hero, Benedict, as a Pharisee in need of conversion in order to take the next step in his spiritual life, which is in order to become a man of vision. He needs to be able to let go of all the power that that is so important to him. He's been a man of miracles. The dialogues are full of the miracles of Benedict prior to this point. But after this point, there are no more miracles. No more miracles of power. Instead, the emphasis is on spiritual vision. And it happens by means of Scholastica. His sister Scholastica, as we see in the second section, who was herself a consecrated person, a nun, a consecrated virgin, used to come down once a year to talk. They would meet, and what would they do? Well, over and over again, just so we don't miss the point, Gregory tells us this was all about sacra colloquia, holy conversation. It's about something that occurs in communion, in dialogue. This dialogue between people who are genuinely seeking the good. This is the beautiful example of what St. Aelred describes as that attractiveness that is seen in the other, which is itself virtue, which is the recognition of the fact that both of you desire the same goal. There is that kind of very attractive friendship between Scholastica and Benedict, because their holy conversation, their sacra colloquia, is about heaven. They are looking towards the joys that lie beyond this life itself. And indeed, Scholastica says, and in a sense we know that there's a kind of an urgency to her request because she's about to die. These are the last few days of her life on earth. Although Benedict doesn't know that, she asks Benedict to stay, to continue speaking about the joys of heaven. He says no, and it is not possible for me to stay outside the monastery for any reason. He invokes his own law, his own rule. Now, Scholastica becomes the means of this important miracle. Gregory wants to make sure we don't miss the point, and so I've numbered it 1, 2, 3, and 4. He makes it very clear that this is no accident, that as Scholastica prays, the heavens open and rain pours forth. As she sheds her flood of tears, clear skies are changed into rain. It happens at exactly the same moment. Clearly, this is God's action. But Benedict, having invoked the rule in order not to prolong Sacra Colloquia, now takes a step further, as it were, into not the example of holiness, but into the example of self-righteousness. His sister has acted on behalf of God. She's acted with the power of God, and Benedict proclaims that it is its opposite. May God forgive you, sister. What have you done? And her response is so beautiful and mild. Well, I appealed to you and you refused to hear me, so I appealed to my Lord and he has heard me. So go, if you can. Leave me. Return to your monastery. And Benedictines of all the different traditions sing these famous phrases from Benedict and Scholastica on the feasts, of, especially of Saint Scholastica. Go now, brother, go if you can. Leave me. Return to your monastery. And Gregory points out Benedict was powerless. Now, he's been forced against his will to acknowledge the power of this woman who stands for the charity of God, the desire to prolong the Sacra Colloquia, the mutual exchange that looks toward heaven, and against his will, as it were, he spends holy conversation, the night in holy conversation on the spiritual life. Now, the conclusion of this story is surprising and can even be painful at times to Benedictines. There is a miracle that blocked his will, as Gregory puts it. He was unable to obtain what he wanted. And then a very beautiful and subtle allusion. This is not surprising because God is love. And by a just judgment, she was the more powerful because hers was the greater love. And those who live and breathe the scriptures will catch the reference to Luke 7:44, which I've listed here, although it's not a part of Gregory's text, where in the house of Simon the Pharisee, Christ tells Simon about the woman, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. So there's almost certainly an allusion to this text in which the greater love is had by the woman. And that places Benedict in the role of the Pharisee. Again, a sort of a painful thing sometimes for those who follow the rule of Benedict to admit, but it's a reminder of the fact that conversion is lifelong. It is ongoing. Even the man of power, even the founder of the tradition, the one who writes the beautiful rule, is in need of this further step of conversion, stepping out of his own Pharisaic, self-righteous tendency to invoke the letter of the law, when in fact what is required is the recognition of the greater love. Now, we will carry on with the second part of this story, his vision of Scholastica entering heaven, and then the even more powerful second, as it were, image, the second part of this diptych, the story of Benedict in the tower window, which is a wonderful reminder of Christian contemplative experience. But it's important in our reflections on conversion to reflect on the fact that there is an ongoing releasing or letting go of self-righteousness, a letting go of even what seems to be one's own spiritual power or authority in order to see, in order to behold the real compassion of God occurring and appearing in unexpected ways. And when this happens, then a certain kind of contemplative power or capacity is unlocked within the person, and they are able to behold more of God than they saw before. And this is a theme that we'll, of course, take up in the next section when we look more specifically at the movement from the active life of virtue and the quest of virtue into the experience of contemplative beholding. And we will there make the point that the two are always intertwined. And this story is very much a reminder not just of a particular moment of conversion, but of an ongoing experience of deepening in vision through letting go of self-righteousness.